Welcome back, everyone, to the PwC podcast. Super excited for today's deep dive. We're going to be talking about, well, you know, you sent in this really cool stuff.
Yeah.
You know, about how can the church, like, really step into its full potential? And, you know, I think you called it a consultant's perspective.
Yeah, that's right.
No fluff, just straight to the point. Like, yeah. How do we actually make a difference right here, right now in the world? So I'm really pumped to unpack these ideas with you and hopefully give our listeners some, like, super tangible takeaways that they can put into practice right away.
Awesome.
All right. So let's kick things off.
All right.
One of the first things that really jumped out at me from what you shared is this whole idea of blending in versus standing out.
Yeah.
Like, you know, the church kind of becoming invisible because we're so afraid of, I guess, offending people or being different, that we kind of just blend into the background noise of the culture.
Yeah,
right.
And I think that that's a huge problem. You know, the source talks about this fear of rejection leading to this kind of cultural neutrality. And I think what happens is we end up losing our distinctiveness. You know, what makes us unique?
Yeah. And it's like, what's the point of being the church if we don't stand for something, if we don't have a message, if we're not distinct?
Exactly. And the source actually uses this term, you know, brand erosion.
Oh, interesting.
Which I thought was really fascinating.
Okay.
Like, you know, if we're not careful, our message gets diluted, right?
Yeah.
Our values, our kingdom positioning, as it says, gets kind of watered down until we're just like everybody else.
Yeah. It's like, how can we be salt and light if we've lost our saltiness?
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
And I think you made a great point earlier.
Yeah.
You know, how can we be a credible voice for change if we're not living any differently than the world around us?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And, you know, the source even quotes Romans 12:2, which says, do not conform to the pattern of this world.
Right.
And, you know, to me, that's like a pretty clear directive.
Yeah.
Like, we are not supposed to just blend in. We're supposed to be transformed, renewed, and that transformation should be evident in the way we live our lives.
Mm-hmm.
So what's the solution here?
Well, the source actually offers some really practical steps, I think.
Okay, good.
And it talks about reestablishing our distinctiveness.
Mm-hmm.
And it does it by, you know, talking about living boldly, but not being obnoxious, you know, loving deeply, but not silently.
Right.
And speaking truth.
Uh-huh.
But with grace, always with grace.
Yeah.
I think those are really, really important distinctions, to be bold and loving and truthful, but to do it in a way that's honoring to God.
Absolutely.
And I think that's really the key.
Okay, so that's the first strategic problem that the source identifies. What's the next one?
So the next one is really about passion.
Oh, okay.
And I think this is something that a lot of us can probably relate to.
Yeah, I think so.
It talks about this idea of losing our emotional connection to the mission.
Mm, okay.
You know, that initial excitement, that fire in our hearts that we might have had when we first, you know, came to faith or when we, you know, first started serving in a certain way.
Mm.
It can sometimes get replaced by routine.
Mm.
It can get replaced by habit.
Yeah.
Devotion turns into duty.
Right. It just becomes like another thing to check off the list.
Exactly.
And it's not coming from that place of, like, genuine love and passion anymore.
Right. And you know what the source says? The consequence of this is that people might be going through the motions, but their hearts are no longer really engaged.
Oh.
And the source actually quotes Revelation 2:4 here, where it says, you have forsaken your first love.
Wow. Yeah. That's a really tough one, but I think it's so true. You know, it's easy to get caught up in the busyness of life, to get distracted by other things and to lose sight of that initial passion that we had.
Yeah. And I think, you know, you were talking earlier about the importance of the church standing out and being distinct.
Mm.
And I think this kind of ties into that, right?
Okay, yeah.
Because if we've lost our passion, if we're not excited about what we believe, how are we going to communicate that effectively to others?
Right, yeah. It's like trying to, like, sell a product that you don't even believe in yourself.
Exactly. You know?
Yeah.
You're not going to be very convincing.
Yeah, no one's going to buy it.
Right. And the source actually uses a really, really great analogy here.
Okay.
It talks about subscribers not opening emails.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
You know, they're still on the mailing list,
Right.
but they're not engaging with the content. That emotional connection is lost.
Yeah, they're not clicking through. They're not, yeah.
Exactly.
It's just sitting there in their inbox unopened.
Yeah, and I think that's a really powerful image of what can happen when we lose our passion for our faith.
Yeah. So what's the antidote?
Well, the source talks about the importance of reigniting our relationship with Jesus.
Okay.
You know, and it emphasizes making time for him, prioritizing that relationship,
Right.
making it a priority.
So not just like going to church on Sunday, but actually like having a daily
Yes.
personal relationship with Jesus.
Exactly. And I love this. It actually talks about passion as a discipline.
Oh, that's interesting.
You know, not just something that we either have or we don't, but something that we need to cultivate, something we need to work on.
So if you're feeling like maybe you've lost some of that initial spark, the source is saying that it's possible to reignite it, but it takes effort. It
Yes.
takes intentionality.
Yes, it does. And you
Yeah.
know, it's not always easy,
No.
but it is possible.
Right.
And I think it's so worth it.
Okay, well, if what we're talking about today is resonating with you, if you're feeling like maybe you've lost your way a little bit,
Yeah.
or if you're just looking for a community of people who are passionate about their faith and are trying to make a difference in the world, we want to invite you to come visit PWC.Pittsford Wesleyan Church. We would love to have you. We'd love to connect with you, and just journey with you.
Exactly.
All right, so moving on to the next strategic problem that the source talks about.
All right.
This one is kind of a tough one,
Yeah.
but it's something that I think we need to talk about. And that is this idea of muzzling the message.
Yeah, so the source actually calls this muzzled the message, and it really talks about this fear of offending, this fear of saying the wrong thing that has kind of overshadowed our courage to speak the truth.
Yeah, and it's like, I get it. We live in a culture where people are easily offended,
Right.
and it's like you walk on eggshells sometimes, you're
Yeah.
afraid to say anything. But the source makes a really powerful point, which is
Yeah.
that when we stay silent, when we muzzle the message,
Yeah.
we're actually being disobedient to God.
Right. And it goes back to that first point. You know, if we're supposed to be distinct, if we're supposed to stand out, then we can't be afraid to speak the truth.
And the source even quotes 2 Timothy 1:7, which says, God has not given us a spirit of fear.
Right.
So it's like, we're not supposed to be afraid. We're supposed to be bold. We're supposed to be courageous.
Exactly. And the source talks about the impact of this silence, this self-imposed silence as lost ROI,
Oh, interesting.
which, you know, return on investment, which I thought was a really interesting way to frame it. But then it takes it a step further and it talks about the eternal return on impact. You know, the opportunities that we miss when we don't speak up, the people that we could have reached, the lives that we could have changed if we had just been willing to share the truth. You know, and I think that's something that we need to really think about
Absolutely.
because the stakes are high.
So how do we overcome this fear of offending,
Yeah.
and how do we find that courage to speak up?
Well, I think the source gives us some really good advice. You know, it talks about positioning ourselves as messengers,
I see.
not as judges, not as people who are trying to condemn others, but as people who are simply trying to share the truth that has changed our own lives.
Yeah, so speaking the truth, but doing it in a way that's loving and
Yes.
compassionate and understanding.
Yes, exactly. And it also talks about the importance of asking questions.
Oh,
You know,
cool.
instead of just making statements, instead of just preaching at people, engaging in a dialogue, really listening to what others have to say, and trying to understand their perspective.
So meet people where they are and have a conversation.
Yeah.
Don't just like lecture at them.
Exactly. And the source also encourages us to be strategic. You know, to think about the best way to communicate our message, the right time and place, the right audience, you know, and to be sensitive to the context.
Yeah, it's not just about yelling it from the rooftops,
Right. Yeah.
Sometimes it's about having a quiet conversation with someone
Yeah.
one on one.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's about being wise.
Yeah, I think that's a really, really good point.
So, moving on to the next strategic problem.
Okay.
This one is about discipleship, or rather the lack of discipleship.
Yeah, the source calls this operating without a scalable growth model.
Okay, so break that down for me. What does that mean exactly?
Yeah, so it's basically saying that we're not very good at making disciples. You know, we might be good at getting people in the door, but we're not so good at helping them grow in their faith, helping them mature, helping them become more like Jesus.
And it's not just about, getting more people to come to church.
Right.
It's about making sure that the people who are already there are actually growing in their faith
Yeah.
so that they can, go out and make more disciples.
Exactly. And the source actually uses a business analogy here. It talks about having a strong brand, but not having the infrastructure to support it.
Okay, so what does that look like in a church context?
Well, I think it looks like churches that are really good at putting on events, you know, churches that are really good at attracting crowds, but they're not so good at the follow-up, at the one-on-one discipleship, at the mentoring, at the, you know, really investing in people's lives.
Yeah, so they might have a lot of people coming in the front door, but they're not really seeing a lot of spiritual growth
Right.
or
Yeah,
maturity.
exactly.
So what's the solution? What can we do to create a more scalable growth model?
Well, I think the source really emphasizes the importance of prioritizing discipleship, you know, and it talks about this idea of a spiritual growth funnel,
Oh, interesting.
which I thought was really, really interesting.
Okay, so explain that a little bit more.
So, you know, you have people coming in at the top of the funnel, and then as they go through the funnel, they're being discipled, they're being mentored, they're being equipped, and then they come out the other end as mature disciples who are ready to go out and make more disciples.
And so that's how you create a system that can actually grow and multiply.
Exactly. And the source actually gives us some really practical steps.
Okay, good.
You know, it talks about getting into a discipleship group, starting a discipleship group, being intentional about it, and building duplication. You know, making sure that the people who are being discipled are also being equipped to disciple others.
Yeah, so it's not just a one-way street.
Exactly. It's about passing it on. It's about multiplying.
I love that.
Yeah, and I think that's really the key to seeing the church grow and flourish.
All right, so we've got a couple more strategic problems to talk about.
Yeah.
What's the next one?
So the next one is kind of interesting. It talks about the danger of delegating the mission to just a few people.
So what does that look like in practice?
So you know, I think it's easy to fall into this trap of thinking that ministry is only for pastors and professional church staff.
Like there's this like clergy and laity divide, and
Exactly.
the clergy are the ones who do the ministry, and the laity are the ones who sit in the pews and consume it,
Right. And the source actually calls every believer a high value asset. You know, and it talks about how, if we're not careful, we can really underutilize this incredible resource that we have.
Yeah, because every single person who's a follower of Jesus has been given gifts and talents and abilities that they can use to serve God and to serve others. And if we're only relying on, a small percentage of people to do all the work, then we're missing out on so much potential.
Right. You know, the source talks about burnout. Yeah, you know, among the few who are trying to do everything.
Right, because they're carrying the weight of the whole church on their shoulder.
Exactly.
And
Exactly.
that's not sustainable.
No, it's not. Yeah. You know, and the source even quotes Ephesians 4:1-12, which talks about how the purpose of leadership is to equip the saints for the work of ministry.
So it's not about the leaders doing all the work.
Right.
It's about them equipping everyone else to do the work.
Exactly.
So what does that look like practically?
Well, I think it means that we need to start seeing ourselves as ministers, no matter what our role is in the church.
So not just the pastor, not just the worship leader, not just the Sunday school teacher, but
Yes.
everyone who calls themselves a Christian.
Yeah. And the source actually talks about owning our personal assignment, you know, and really stepping into that God-ordained sphere of influence that we all have.
And that sphere of influence might be our family.
Mm-hmm.
It might be our workplace.
Right.
It might be our neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
Wherever we are,
yeah,
we have an opportunity to be a minister of the gospel.
Right.
To be the hands and feet of Jesus.
Right.
To make a difference in the world.
Exactly.
All right. So last strategic problem from the source.
Okay.
This one is about having an eternal perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Or rather, losing our eternal perspective.
Yeah. The source calls this lost the eternal time horizon.
Okay. What does that mean exactly?
Yeah. So it's basically saying that we've become so focused on the here and now.
Okay.
On what's easy and comfortable,
mm-hmm.
that we've lost sight of eternity.
Mm-hmm.
We're no longer making decisions based on what will matter in 100 years,
right.
but on what will make us happy today,
yeah.
or what will make us comfortable today.
Yeah. Or what will get us more likes on social media today.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And the source talks about the consequence of this mm-hmm. as living for short-term gratification rather yeah. than eternal impact.
Right. And it talks about misaligned incentives.
Right.
Like we're motivated by the wrong things.
Mm-hmm.
We're chasing after things that ultimately don't matter
yeah.
instead of things that will last forever.
Exactly. And the source actually gives us a really simple yet really powerful question to ask ourselves every day.
Okay. What's the question?
The question is, will this matter 100 years from now?
Wow. Okay.
And I think that's such a great question to ask ourselves.
Yeah. Because it really puts things into perspective,
mm-hmm.
doesn't it?
Yeah.
Like, when you think about it that way, so many of the things that we worry about,
yeah,
so many of the things that we stress over,
mm-hmm.
they just seem so insignificant.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, they really do.
So how do we shift our focus back to eternity?
Well, I think it starts with remembering that this life is not all there is.
Right.
You know, we have a hope. Mm. We have a future
yeah.
that extends far beyond this world.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the source encourages us to make decisions,
yeah.
to live our lives
mm-hmm.
in light of that eternity.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, I mean, we've covered a lot of ground today.
Yeah, we have.
What's kind of the overall takeaway?
Well, you know, the source ends with a really powerful call to action.
Okay.
And it's all about the need for a consecrated church.
Mm.
You know, not just a cooler church,
right.
not just a more relevant church,
right.
but a church that is set apart, mm-hmm. a church that is holy,
yeah.
a church that is dedicated to God's purposes.
Right.
And I think that's what the world needs.
Absolutely. And it also makes this really important statement, which is that we're not waiting for revival.
Yeah.
Revival is waiting for us.
Yeah, and I think that's so true.
Mm-hmm.
You know, revival starts with us.
Mm-hmm.
It starts with our willingness to surrender our lives to God,
mm-hmm.
to obey him,
mm-hmm.
to follow him,
right.
no matter the cost.
Yeah, it's not about waiting for God to do something. It's about us doing something.
Exactly, exactly.
So what does that look like practically?
Well, the source actually lays out a really simple blueprint for action.
Okay, awesome. What's the blueprint?
Okay, so the first step is to audit our lives.
Okay.
You know, to really take a look at where we are yeah. and see if we're blending in or standing out.
Okay.
The second step is to reconnect with Jesus daily.
Okay.
You know, to make him a priority.
Right.
To spend time with him in prayer and in his word.
Mm-hmm.
The third step is to initiate one uncomfortable but spirit-led conversation this week.
Okay, yeah. So get out of our comfort zone.
Yes.
And be willing to share our faith with others.
Exactly. Exactly.
Right. Well,
the fourth step is to engage in discipleship.
You know, to get into a discipleship group or to start a discipleship group.
Mm-hmm.
And then the fifth step is to own our mission.
Okay.
You know, to step into our sphere of influence and to start making a difference right where we are.
Yeah. So stop waiting for someone else to do it and just do it ourselves.
Exactly.
And then the final step
yeah.
is to use eternity as a decision filter.
Right.
You know, to ask ourselves, will this matter 100 years from now?
Yes.
Before we make any decision.
Exactly. And I think if we do those things,
yeah.
if we really commit to living this way,
mm-hmm.
I think we're going to start to see some amazing things happen.
Wow. That's a really powerful blueprint.
Yeah, I think it is.
And I love how practical it is.
Mm.
You know, it's not just some vague idea. It's
yeah.
it's something that we can actually do.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, so we're coming to the end of our deep dive today, mm. and I just want to say thank you so much
for sharing all of this incredible insight with us.
It's been a pleasure.
I really believe that what we've talked about today has the potential to change lives.
Yeah, I think so too.
You know, and I pray that God would use it to awaken his church, mm-hmm. to empower his people,
yeah.
and to bring about a revival in our land. So for those of you who are listening,
yeah.
You know, we would love to connect with you. If you're looking for a church home, mm. we would love to invite you to come visit PWC Pettsford Wesleyan Church.
Mm.
We're a community of people who are trying to live out these principles. Mm-hmm. Expert speaker.